Because I'm not in Planck, I'm more WMAP-centric. So I was very worried about this parameter shift. So I was in Japan on March 21st. I was actually attending my former student's wedding, and all happy, and then, okay, now the time to go on internet and listen to press conference. And I saw this Omega Lambda 68. What? 8 knots, 67. Wow, what the hell? So it essentially ruined happy moment, and then I had to dig this up. So one thing I was very worried about is because I had this WMAP-centric mind, these changes had to come from the change in the data somehow over the range that WMAP measured. If that was the case, I really wanted to understand. But as it turns out, it doesn't seem to be the case, so that's good. But then I'll let you report to you what I found so far. So these are the parameters from the maximum likelihood values of the WMAP-9, and these are the Planck plus WMAP polarization. And as you can see, omega matter h squared went up by about 5%. And if you only look at, for example, the core dark matter density, it really went up even more than 5%. There's a slight change in the prior on the neutrino mass density, but that didn't have much impact on the parameters. And the h naught went down by 4%. But if you actually multiply the two, so this and that, then omega matter h cubed didn't change very much, only 0.6%, which indicates that the peak positions haven't changed very much. As Joe already said, peak position primarily depends upon omega matter h cubed, and that combination didn't change. So where does the change come from? And so let's look at the acoustic scales of the angular sine in radian of the acoustic scale in the sky. So that's a set scale in the universe. And that changed only by 0.2%. So peak positions are in a very good agreement between two data sets. That's good to know. And as I said, that's related to the fact that omega matter h cubed didn't change very much. Amplitude. So you fit the CMB power spectrum and try to infer the amplitude of the primordial power spectrum. But since WMAP measures the temperature anisotropy, which is later screened by ionized electrons due to the Farsol stars, so what you measure is the amplitude times e to the minus 2 times optical depth. And because best fit optical depth is a little different between Planck and WMAP, what you really have to compute is amplitude times e to the minus 2 tau, and they are essentially the same. Amplitude was the same also. What changed anyway, right? So that was a question. But if you actually look at the data, the black is the WMAP first 9-year published power spectrum, smooth over delta L of 50. Dash is a Planck. And you know, they are different. Yeah? So Planck published power spectrum is about 2.5% lower than the WMAP published power spectrum. If you multiply WMAP by 0.975, this magic number, then they seem to agree. So initially I was very worried because this parameter shift, 2.5%, okay, so this parameter shift of about 5% omega matter h square, corresponding with about 5% parameter down in the h naught. That's exactly what you would expect if the first peak height went down by 2.5%. That's exactly what you would expect, assuming that everything else is the same. And because of the signal to noise, it's rather hard to see whether Planck and WMAP are different here. So the initial thought I had was, geez, that's a real problem here. This shifting parameter came from first peak, where WMAP is also cosmic variance limited. In that case, parameters must agree with much better within much better than one sigma. So I'll spend more time looking into this. It turns out that, but now we are almost convinced that WMAP is more or less uniformly higher than Planck at all multiples that WMAP measures. But then, where did the 2.5% go? Amplitude didn't change. It changed only by 0.3%. Right? So that still needs to be understood. But this issue is independent of where does the 2.5% offset between WMAP and Planck come from. I'm not going to talk about that. This is something that we're trying to understand now. And it looks like some calculation offset, but we will see. So just forget the thing about the cause of this 2.5% offset. Now I want to understand why parameters changed, although amplitude didn't change. Because that's completely opposite to what you would expect by looking at this figure. You know, here, it seems like just amplitude is different and that's it. But somehow, the Planck wants more changes in more parameters than just amplitude. So here is the best fit theoretical curve, assuming 6-parameter lambda CDN. And the black is WMAP and red is Planck. And as you can see, they're a little different. Overall amplitude is a little different. If you now divide WMAP by Planck, then you get this curve here. Now this wiggle here, right, there's a structure in it. But this structure isn't very real. It simply comes from the fact that the peak positions are not exactly the same. They are offset by 0.2%. So if you adjust horizontal axis, then you do this, right? So this wiggly feature is reduced. Then you see, okay, good. So there's an offset. Then if I do Markov-Chain Monte Carlo in my head, I just get the same parameter, except that amplitude is down. But somehow, Planck wants more than that. For example, it sees the tilt, right? So indeed, Planck's best fit tilt is a little lower. So if then I recomputed the WMAP best fit by changing NS. Okay, not the best fit. So if I take same parameters as the WMAP best fit parameters, but only change NS, then I get this blue curve. So it looks more constant here, right? But still you have an offset here. So what about damping? So another thing that you can change, you can use to change the higher power spectrum is silk damping. And silk damping gives you an exponential damp in the power spectrum in this funny form. And you have this angular scale that corresponds to the acidic damping scale. And that depends on various parameters such as H naught, omega bar H square, and omega bar H square. But it didn't change very much from WMAP to Planck. But since this is an exponential effect, maybe half a percent effect does something to you. And note that the Planck's one sigma error on this acidic damping scale is less than the change from WMAP to Planck. So this is where the Planck actually can derive the parameters to a different region than inferred by WMAP. So I can now undo acidic damping, or actually apply more acidic damping to WMAP data by using this formula. It's easy enough to do. And then the spectrum at high L now agrees. So WMAP and Planck spectra now agree at high L, and they have the equal amplitude, right? But what about low L? So in order to understand what's going on in low L, we now have to understand, okay, I just simply took this damping scale and applied this correction, but what does damping scale depend on? And it's very messy. So if you raise omega baryon H square, for example, then you are more tightly coupled until later. So that makes diffusion scale smaller, That's why you have a minus sign here. And if you increase the expansion rate, then you dump more. So for example, when you change omega mod h square, the positive sign here, so dumping is a little more, or if you change h naught itself, you dump more. But it's clearly a degenerate problem. There's no single parameter that gives you dumping scale. So although thick dumping may be one of the reasons why you get the discrepancy between parameters in development Planck, but that may not be the only thing. For example, Joe showed that there's a correlation between omega mod h squared and omega mod h squared, anti-correlation in fact. Well, that may in fact come from this anti-correlation here. But Joe also showed you that there's an interplay between this and n. And that's a little different phenomenology. It has to do more with the peak height correlated with NS. And that correspondingly change omega bar n h squared and omega bar h squared. But anyway, let's assume that thick dumping is somehow driving the parameter shift, because this is something WNOP doesn't measure very well. So by lifting this up, I implicitly change the parameters of the cosmological parameters. So I should somehow reflect that onto this region also in order to be completely consistent. And you can achieve this, in fact, if H naught is lowered by 4% by thick dumping scale, because you want more thick dumping. So the first thing you can do is to raise the expansion rate during decoupling. Since omega matter H cubed is fixed, omega matter H squared wants to go up by 4%. But as Joe showed you already, when you raise omega matter h squared, there is a less early ISW effect, so peak amplitude goes down. Right? If the WMAP amplitude goes down by some factor, then this ratio will go up. So just to make the point, let me do the following exercise. Don't touch baryon density to make things easy. So silicon scale is a little wrong, but it's okay. But instead, raise the CDM density to get the Planck total matter density, which is about 5% higher than WMAP. Then keep omega matter h cubed fixed to keep the peak position the same, so h naught will go down. Result is, well, you get agreement here. So now we have more or less consistent story here. So why is the Planck higher spectrum lower? It's a combination of tilt and thick dumping. But tilt wouldn't do anything, okay, directly, but indirectly would change other parameters. But let's say, if you change thick scale, you have to up H naught, up omega bar H square, down omega bar H square. And that will lift. Well, that will resolve this lower part through the ISW effect. Conclusion is that why did the amplitude not change from WMAP to Planck despite this overall 2.5% offset between them? Well, somehow data are too good. You know, data, if you look at that curve and do the Monte Carlo in the head, you sort of smooth out these peak structures and or tilt or whatever to get the overall offset, but the data are actually a lot better than that. So data want more complicated combination parameters, which are all degenerate anyway. So you have tilt, you have a silicon scale, and you have early ASW, and they are sort of jointly play a role in fitting the data. And end result is somewhat magical. It happens that you lift the pulse wave by tilt and silicon scale and early SW, and you don't need to change overall amplitude. it's magic. So I think that at least explains phenomenologically why the parameters have changed. And this makes me feel more comfortable, because this shows you that it's not just a first peak. The improvement or change the parameter does seem to come from high L. Also, initially that I thought that lensing might play a role here also, because when you decouple lensing amplitude from the cosmological parameters but treat that as a free parameter, then cosmological parameter seem to go back to W0. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. So you don't have to invoke lensing to reconcile the two parameters, it looks like. This doesn't solve this 2.5% offset, but at least I can, I think, understand the parameter shift between W0 and Planck in this way. Yeah, all right? That's it.
So now SPT. So, Shiro.
What do you mean?
the point was made by Karlstrom that when they look, Planck map to SPT map rather than the whole sky, everything looks really good. And that the parameters actually look good. You know, we had this issue about maybe a small tension between
and
SPT. But SPT says all of its problems arise when it's combined with WMAP in terms of discrepancy. And so this story, where the damping tail is the big issue, will play into SPT in a very nice way. And the question is how you think that interacts, because it's taking WMAP and providing a lever arm. And if you just look at it, there's no, you know, really obvious smoking gun. And yet, you know, you combine the two, and that's a pretty good combined power spectrum. Of course, really.
Yeah, and in fact, it just does lower NS. It does lower NS if we combine that map with SPT or ACT, right? So it's doing a similar thing.
So, yeah, so the thing is, you think that that's just adding to the story of damping tail adjustment.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's the same phenomenology. We haven't really seen it until now because error bars are still big enough, but with Planck, it was pretty obvious. Yeah, I think
so. I mean, I like the story. It's a great tale. Except that it may stop me doing the next paper, which is, that's fine too. But, you know, we have this issue of saying, well, what you can do with the CMB data is to let, at some level, recombination flow, and then you try and constrain, and of course the damping tail is very, very sensitive to exactly what you're doing with the recombination history. And I had the feeling that it, you could use that to probably soak up the H-naught issue. But now it isn't clear from what you're saying that you actually need that. Because of the
influence
of effects.
Well, H0 is still lower.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't change the value of H0 here. I just wanted to explain why it changed. But H0 is still lower. Right? So if you wanted to reconcile the H0 from Planck and H0 from Cepheid, you still have to invoke something else like recombination. And it goes in the right way, because indeed this parameter shift comes from dumping.
Yeah.
Tilt dumping, you know, this thing.
Anyway, so another issue about what you just raised is that there's no apparent smoking gun with AL, which is what we were discussing just the other day.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that, you know, the relative ups and downs, maybe there's a small effect there, but that's not actually driving this issue at all.
It's not driving this at all, that's right. I think that's right, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
It looks a little bit like changing the damping tail, right? I mean, that's why if you just add AL as a parameter, you get something. If you don't do anything else, then you can sort of soak up some of that in this fake sort of extra parameter.
But I was very confused when I did that. So I did play with that game. Yeah. Somehow, if I look at the best fit power spectrum with AL, the power is higher than without AL. So somehow.
But it should be right because if you just increase AL, then you do increase the power on small scales, a little bit.
What position do we understand the self-tank stamping theoretically? Because after all, it's relatively complicated non-equilibrium physics. I mean, and we are speaking here about percent. You get the percent by changing parameters, but the question is...
So physics of cyclic damping isn't really decoupled from just solving Einstein-Boltzmann system.
Yeah,
it was just discovered without doing that before.
I know, the Einstein-Boltzmann system, but that's of course an approximation. Do we have any estimate?
Well, to the extent that it's a first-order perturbation theory, there's no approximation. Beyond that, it's a first-order perturbation theory, and you do multiple expansion up to L of 10 or so, then you get a fairly good answer. I think that if there's any issue, it's a recombination history like Dick just raised.
The whole question, once you have Boltzmann equations, of course you can solve them. But do we know this what the accuracy Boltzmann equations, Boltzmann
Not for the purposes of what we're seeing here. There really is an issue. I mean, soap damping is a bit of a misnomer. It's actually, well, in the tight coupling, it's three processes. Well, the dominant process is shear viscosity. It's not thermal diffusion, which is what the soap point to. But you really have to deal with exactly how it's breaking out in order to get this with accuracy. But we think we do that, and that's been checked time and time again. A relatively large change occurred in the past few years. Parada over there was one of the key movers, and Jens Kluge was another, where there was a renewed attack on the physics of recombination and all of the complexity of the atomic physics. And so then you ask yourself, well, if they can find that there are effects that weren't included that actually have significance, then maybe we haven't solved this, of course. Chris will nod his head and say, of course we solved it, but and probably it's true. What we were trying to do was to say, well, what if you haven't perfectly solved it? Let's try and look for possible changes in that. So the interesting question is, relative to where we were a couple of years ago and where we are now, could we have seen that with Planck? And it's touch and go with the full Planck data, that's it, the full data set, not the one we're dealing with now, and the polarization data, that you could actually start to see that you would have made an error. And then another effect, which could in principle have been more significant, in practice it doesn't seem to be, are quadratic nonlinearities in the Boltzmann transport. And so recently that's been attacked head-on with the nonlinear Boltzmann transport code. And those effects are probably something that, unfortunately, Planck won't be able to see. But they're just a little bit below what Planck can see. So given all of that, I think we're in a pretty firm foundation for dealing with the damping tail. And so I think that the conclusions we're able to draw are fairly robust to that, subject to the fact that maybe there's a bit more of recombination. And the recombination issue could be reflected by a little bit of early energy ejection as well. Do you agree with what I just said?
Yeah, in terms of the conventional physics that goes into recombination, there's a photon spectrum, there are QED processes up through second order, absorption of photons. That's under control, and the different groups get results that are you plot them on top of each other, and the difference between them is a tiny fraction of what the theoretical error bars were for Planck. Cannot be larger than the real errors. You could then ask. As Dick was saying, well, are there pieces of physics that go into that we didn't include? Maybe there's some late decaying particle or something of that form. You could always imagine possible changes to the standard cosmology that would patch up some of these issues. I think at the level of discrepancies we see here, I'm not going to jump up and down about those, but they are possibilities.
So we go back to the story. So imagine
say it's Veit's fault. Impossible, though that would be believed. And we raise Planck by 2.5%. Mm-hmm. If we do that, then the only thing that changes is the amplitude.
That's right.
So there has to be something in the detailed structure of the difference that's actually responsible for the reason why the amplitude stays the same.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we have a feeling for exactly what's going on there to drive it to the particular solution that it is. As opposed to just
why this solution was chosen among others?
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but it's just a digital. So if you look at, you remember this the plot that Joe showed, right? You have this NS omega bound x square omega CH square three-way degeneracy. Just you have to pick.
Sure, but the fact that it's ending up where the amplitude is the same is weird. I mean, maybe it's
I know. That's right. Yeah.
It seems like there's something subtle in the positions of the peaks, or the amplitude of the peaks that's forcing it to that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If there is any, I wouldn't know.
But I think the phenomenology is that the fourth, fifth, and sixth peaks are lower. Mm-hmm.
And
that's roughly
lower than W map best fit.
Lower than the W map best fit.
Right. So
yeah.
If we do that alone, yeah. And so that changes the silk damping scale.
Yeah, but I guess one thing that I could say is that the way that the Planck is a little tilted, this is not silk damping, because this isn't the exponential. But if you were to change silk damping to do this, undo this, you overcorrect the larger scales. So you actually bring up amplitude a little bit. But somehow tilt alone doesn't seem to be able to do that either, because you change here too much.
Right.
Yeah. So we just don't have a physical effect that gives you something that looks like this, I guess. Yeah. Okay? Yeah.